host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, licensed professional counselor, and marriage and family therapist. This evening, we're going to be discussing COVID-19 and mental health. And as our guests, we have Dr. Jennifer Russell, Ashley Warren, a provisionally licensed professional counselor, and also Coral Serrano-Bennett, also PLPC. Thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thanks.
So, Dr. Jennifer Russell, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Sure. I'm a Shreveport native, and I'm in private practice currently. I'm a licensed psychologist here in Louisiana as well as in Texas. In my private practice, I do outpatient therapy. I do a lot of work with anxiety disorders, depressive disorders, and post-traumatic stress disorder and other trauma-related issues. I also do forensic work in that private practice.
And Ashley Warren, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
So my name is Ashley. I'm a provisional licensed professional counselor here in Louisiana. I also am employed at a private practice where I do counseling there, as well as some psychological technician work. So I do a lot of testing with children and adults, and I help the doctors in their cases.
And Coral Serrano-Bennett, tell us about you and what you do.
Sure. I am also a provisional licensed professional counselor, hopefully LPC in just a few weeks. I work at Family Psychology and Counseling, which is a local private practice, and it offers medical psychology, so that's med management as well as psychotherapy.
So, as many people are talking about right now, we're going to be discussing COVID-19. That seems to be everything. Every time you turn on the TV, what's on, and we're gonna join that. But I want to take a slightly different view at this, because a lot of what we hear is about how many more people have been diagnosed, how many more people have passed away. And that can be really overwhelming and anxiety provoking and depressing. And so we thought it was really important to address some of the mental health concerns that are coming along with COVID-19. So let's start there. You know, it is an overwhelming time. There's so much changing and so much going on. Any suggestions for the listeners as to how to handle these overwhelming times and these feelings of just so much coming at us at one time?
The biggest theme, maybe just in how we manage these overwhelming feelings, is trying to focus on what is in our control, because so much is uncertain right now. So much is new and unpredictable. So just trying to focus on identifying what is in my control, and in managing those stress triggers. So if every time you hear a fact on the news, that's, you know, that activates your stress, what we could control about that would be limiting how much news we consume, and maybe trying to balance that out with some positive information as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think also noticing when you're overwhelmed, because sometimes we just keep going and we keep going, especially with our busy daily lives, and we don't even notice when we're close to burnout. And so I think it's important to know yourself and know when you're at that point before it goes too far. That way you can kind of take those precautions before it gets to that point.
So Ashley, what are some of the things that people might look for to kind of cue them that they are getting burned out, that they are becoming overwhelmed, and they need to step back and take a look at some things to change what's going on with them?
I would say frequent mood fluctuations, being extra irritable, noticing that you're more anxious than normal. As soon as you get home, you go straight to your TV and you're constantly looking at the death toll, how many have been diagnosed with the virus. And, you know, you feel yourself on edge. Those may be some of the most common ones that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I want to invite our listeners to call with your question or comment. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. In addition to the feelings of being overwhelmed, just a lot of people are reporting to me, not only my patients, but acquaintances, friends, family. There's just a lot of anxiety in the air just because there's so much change and there's so much uncertainty. So if we're struggling with anxiety, what suggestions do you have regarding how to cope and manage that anxiety?
So kind of going back to what Coral said earlier about controlling the things that are within our control. Anxiety stems often from experiencing worry about the unknown. And there's a lot unknown about this situation, the duration of it and all of that, how bad it's going to get, how long we're going to be under these distancing restrictions. So focusing on the things that are within our control and going back to the basics of good sleep, good diet, exercise, connecting. We are socially, we are physically distanced, but we don't have to be socially distanced. We can still connect with people. It may look different during this time so that we can keep ourselves safe. But reaching out, you know, by phone or video chat, text, calling, that sort of thing, to get support and to have people that kind of brighten your day and lift your spirits a little bit in your life.
What I would add to that too is depending on how an individual experiences that anxiety, we might, you know, cater to that and manage it differently. So if one person is really just noticing a lot of physical tension, physical symptoms, either discomfort or dissociation, we would maybe do some mindfulness strategies and trying to control relaxing our body and targeting that physiological response so that we can get to a calm place and then maybe the emotions and the thoughts follow.
Coral, would you talk a little bit, would you describe what mindfulness is and maybe talk the listeners through a little exercise they can do regarding mindfulness?
Sure. So mindfulness and meditation in particular have recently, you know, just the past few years gotten so much evidence-based research just showing the benefits. And what it is tuning inward and really experiencing things in a way that keeps you in touch with the present moment and keeps you in touch with yourself. I think one of the simplest and most effective ways to start dabbling with that would be just with your breathing. A lot of us breathe with our shoulders heaving up, our chest is really tight, and we're not focusing on truly filling our lungs, feeling our diaphragm expand, and making that exhale longer than the inhale, and really allowing ourselves to release that tension. So doing that, even if it's you know, controlled breathing, just focusing on our breath and what we're feeling, not judging it, not getting lost in our thoughts for a few minutes would make a huge difference. And one more thing that I would add about that is that a lot of us will only turn to that in times of panic. And if we do it on a regular basis, it can have a preventative effect.
Yeah, I know a lot of times I'll have patients do a breathing exercise in session and they're surprised at how much it helps. It really does. It really is helpful. And if you can remember to do that throughout the day, it kind of keeps that baseline anxiety and frustration and irritability and everything kind of down. I mean, it's a great thing to go to when you're particularly anxious, but it's also a great thing just to practice throughout the day to kind of, like I said, keep that baseline down. So what if we have a friend or a family member who is really struggling and having difficulty with anxiety or just coping with the current situation? Any suggestions?
One of the ways that anxiety affects a lot of people is that it makes it hard for them to reach out and to initiate that contact. They sometimes may worry that they might be judged or that it may change that person's view of them or change their relationship with that person. So if you're a friend of someone who is suffering with this, taking the initiative yourself, not requiring them to ask for help, but checking in with them just to see how they're doing. Not necessarily calling out their anxiety by name, but just checking in with them and expressing concern. If you do notice some pretty significant behavioral changes and that sort of thing, of course, encourage them to either establish care with a mental health professional or to set an appointment with someone if they've already got, you know, a therapist or a medication prescriber that they're working with. But that frequent checking in and not requiring them to make the initiative will help as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we have those family members that they show their anxiety, you know, they call you, they're in a panic, they're in a frenzy. And like Jennifer said, some individuals won't, and they won't call and they won't pick up the phone. And those are typically those individuals that are to themselves. They seem like they're okay. They have it all together. But oftentimes those are the ones that you need to call and check in on. They do these things in silence. They suffer in silence. So picking up the phone call, checking in on family members, friends, especially the elderly, grandparents, great-grandparents, checking to see how they're doing is important. Because oftentimes they can't even reach out to you if they are struggling. So checking on the ones that seem like they have it all together, that always are well put together, but maybe need help as well.
Yeah, I think it's important for everyone to realize that there is no shame in being freaked out right now. There is no shame at all in being freaked out right now, because this is something that none of us have ever dealt with before. This is a completely new world for all of us. And even those of us who cope pretty well and have pretty good skills, it's tough, it's rough. And so, you know, reaching out, checking on people, you know, just making sure everybody's okay and checking in with yourself, making sure you're okay. And remembering that, you know, although some of the businesses may be closed, us counselors, we're still working. We're still seeing patients. We're doing it on the telephone and mainly online, but we are still available if people need us. All they have to do is reach out and we're there. So what about if we are feeling lonely and disconnected? I mean, it is really difficult to social distance and feel connected. Any suggestions regarding how to stay connected, how to shake that lonely feeling during this time of isolation?
I think that's a difficult question because we have more outlets to connect than ever before, but some people still feel like that human contact is just lacking. So regardless of that, you know, use those outlets that are available to you. Call, FaceTime, you know, set up a Netflix party where you can watch a movie together, get old-fashioned and write a letter. You know, so those are the ways where you would still maintain that contact, even if it's not going to compare to in person. I think we have to accept that for now.
I want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So in addition to anxiety, what I'm hearing a lot of people report is depression. Just because there's a lot of financial uncertainty, there's a lot of medical uncertainty, and we're just being bombarded with bad news. So I'm hearing a lot of people, you know, expressing sadness and depression. Any suggestions for people who are really struggling with depression or sadness?
I think as with anxiety, we have to kind of check in on how we're experiencing that depression. So depression can have those physical symptoms. It can have symptoms that are associated with our thinking and also with our emotional experience. So trying to kind of use that scope to, you know, challenge self-defeating thoughts, for example, or, you know, increase whatever activity we can or whatever attempts at connectedness we can will be so important in kind of writing that out.
And also, you know, a lot of us are spending a lot more time at home than we normally do, and a lot more kind of unstructured time. Keeping a routine despite the recent changes that we've had is really important as well. So getting up at the same time that you normally would, maintaining a consistent bedtime, maintaining some sort of schedule. You don't have to have every minute of your day planned out, but some sort of order in which you're going to do things, with regular meal times and time for physical activity, and some unstructured downtime for yourself to spend time with either the people that are in your household, or maybe, you know, reaching out to someone by phone or video chat to get some of that social time in as well. That will help. And I also encourage people to restrict what I like to call their media diet. The news is not ever very positive, but in particular right now, we're being bombarded with a ton of information. Some of it is conflicting and it's hard to figure out which sources to trust and that sort of thing. So that can be overwhelming and it can contribute to our depression and anxiety. And hearing about, you know, an illness and the people are passing away from it is depressing. So restrict the amount of time you're spending on media, including social media, to help kind of improve your mood. You want to stay informed, of course, but you can usually do that in a quick, you know, few minutes each day, as opposed to checking in multiple times throughout.
Yeah, one thing that I've recommended to quite a few people is trying to focus on what we can do and what we're grateful for, because we're so bombarded right now with what we can't do. And that can be really depressing. So, you know, trying to focus on what we can do and what we still have and what we can still enjoy and all the good things in life that we do have. Because if you really take a look at it, yes, there are things we can't do right now, but many of the things that we do, we can still do. There are still ways to enjoy ourselves and to have fun. We just may have to get creative with that and do it a slightly different way. I want to invite our listeners to call in with your comment or question. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So we kind of talked a little bit about, you know, loneliness and feeling disconnected and what to do, but how do we really stay, how do we continue to have contact with our support systems? Any suggestions as far as really keeping those support systems strong and reaching out to them when we need them?
So, of course, I've seen an uprise on social media of people having social media parties, watch parties, where they get dressed in a living room and they talk amongst themselves, or people are doing book clubs. Even though we're social distancing, I feel like people have come together more than ever during this time, and they're doing so via social media, by phone call, FaceTiming, writing letters, as Coral mentioned earlier, and even still meeting each other while social distancing. You know, they will go out in a large parking lot, everyone would pull their vehicle 6 feet apart, and they would still talk amongst each other in this group while social distancing. So I think people are finding ways and avenues to still do those things that they used to do. But of course, it is in a different way. But I think people are still finding ways to socialize and enjoy time with their family more than ever before, because we were so busy before the virus.
Yeah, that's an important thing to consider too, is the quality of the interactions that we have with those that we're quarantined with. When we're stressed out, we can sometimes get really irritable with each other and kind of be at each other's throats, maybe get that cabin fever feeling. So as far as staying connected, I think it's important to be really intentional about the way that we communicate and the way that we express our needs.
So there's a lot of people that are experiencing depression, a lot of people that are experiencing anxiety. And as I said earlier, you know, that's a completely understandable reaction to the situation in which we all currently find ourselves. What signs should we be looking for? How do we know when it's time to seek professional help?
I always like to tell my clients, depression, of course, everybody goes through phases of depression, but the severity is different. So if someone passes away, our natural response is to probably be sad if they were close to us and probably be a little bit depressed. But I say the issue arises when you get so down and you can't pick yourself back up. And once you notice that and you can't fight it, you can't get up out of bed in the morning, that's when it's time to seek help.
What I would add to that is certainly with some disorders, there's, you know, suicidal ideation associated. So if you're thinking about hurting yourself or hurting somebody else, that's also a big red flag that it's time to get help.
Mm-hmm. And some of those changes could be, you know, changes to your eating habits. Either you're eating less or you're eating a lot more than you used to. I mentioned earlier, you can't get out of bed. You don't want to talk to your friends, your family members. You're distancing yourself from them. You feel yourself struggle internally. Your thoughts, you know, become very fixated on things, or you don't enjoy the things that you used to like or used to enjoy doing. Those are some of those early warning signs that I may be depressed, or my anxiety may be extremely high compared to 6 months ago.
Yeah, I think that it's important what you said, Ashley, to, you know, look for those signs. And I think it's also important for people to know that, that depression can also be very angry. I think a lot of times we think about a sad, lay in the bed kind of depression. But depression can also look very irritable and angry sometimes. So, you know, really keeping an eye on, are we biting people's head off? You know, are we really just jumping on people that we wouldn't normally be reacting that way? I think, you know, a significant change from how you normally react and interact, and is it interfering with your daily functioning? You know, are you having difficulty getting along with people at work, getting along with people at home? Are you having difficulty completing daily chores and things like that? You know, are you living your life and enjoying your life, or are you having some significant problems? If your problems are significant, then it's probably time to go ahead and at least talk to a professional. And, you know, best case scenario, they say, hey, you're doing pretty good. Keep trucking, you know, you know, and if not, then, you know, we get you in and we give you some tips on how to handle what's going on.
Yeah, there's little to lose in feeling that out. You know, if you're asking yourself, should I get help? There's probably enough there that going to see a professional, you know, that could be useful to you. You could amplify your coping skills and the tools that you have. You could gain awareness into your strengths. So it's not just a kind of like a worst case scenario. Let's see how bad this can get before I reach out.
So again, this evening, we are talking about COVID-19 and mental health. And I want to reintroduce my guests. We have Dr. Jennifer Russell. We have Coral Serrano Bennett, and we also have Ashley Warren. Thank you, ladies, for joining us this evening. And I also want to invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So, you know, there are a lot of changes that are coming at us pretty fast. And we're all having to adapt pretty quickly, which can be difficult. Any suggestions for adapting and dealing with all of these changes?
I think something important is knowing and just knowing that everyone's adaptability naturally is a little bit different. So we can't really compare ourselves to how other people are adapting or how quickly other people are adapting. And also stress, and the stress that we're all under from this like collective crisis also has its toll. So I think we have to be patient and not compare ourselves to our previous functioning either.
I also think it's helpful to break down your day, especially in a situation where we don't know how long this is going to last. Taking things one day at a time. I tell my patients sometimes 1 hour or minute at a time. What do I need to do to get through the next minute? Do I need to do some of that deep breathing and that mindfulness that Coral was talking about earlier? Do I need to reach out to a friend or a family member? Do I need to, you know, just get out and go take a walk and get out of my house for a little while? Doing things, breaking it down into small chunks of time that are easier to manage, that don't feel as overwhelming. And when you're talking about making change, you want to try to focus on one specific area at a time. So, you know, if we're talking about some of the disinfecting rituals and things like that that we're all having to do, develop some of those habits in smaller bits. So focus on one thing to kind of build into your daily routine and then add something else later if you need to. Everything doesn't have to change all at once. You can control the pace at which you implement some of this stuff in your own home. And like Coral said, no one else should be your benchmark for the timeline through which you have to adapt to this. And another person's progress shouldn't affect what you expect of yourself. Be patient with yourself. Give yourself grace. Give yourself compassion. We're often very compassionate to other people, but very hard on ourselves. None of us have an instruction manual on how to do this. None of us have ever done this before. So there's going to be a learning curve, and there's going to be some uncertainty, and just be patient with yourself while you adjust to that.
And I think it's important for people to remember that social media is not a good indication of how other people are adapting. No, yes, people are posting pictures of the beautiful cookies that they just, you know, and the macrame they just did and everything else, but they're not posting, you know, when 15 minutes earlier they broke down and cried. You know, so I think that it's important to know that we tend to post things on social media that are our best selves, that are positive. And we don't necessarily post those things that are us struggling. And so, you know, kind of making social media your guide as to how other people are functioning during this is probably not a terribly accurate representation of how everybody out there is doing.
Yeah, I like to tell people, don't compare your outtakes to someone else's highlight reel.
Yeah.
Which is what social media is, right?
Yeah. So. I would invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. Any general tips for staying emotionally healthy and psychologically healthy during these times?
Self-care, self-care, and self-care again. That is the most important. So doing all those things that you said you were going to do that you didn't have the time to do. Maybe if you wanted to plant that garden, you want to put those flower beds down, you want to do something different in your household, now is the time to do it. Reorganize your closet. Take that bubble bath if you want to take a bubble bath. Any reading, you know, anything that brings you joy, that makes you smile, do it. I think that's most important throughout all of this, especially busy moms and parents. They're busy taking care of their household. Some are still working. So remember you, and you have to be able to get up in the morning. You have to be able to take care of yourself before you can take care of anyone else. And I think sometimes a lot of us will forget that. Take care of you first, pay yourself.
So we had mentioned earlier that routine, you know, trying to maintain some kind of structure is important. How do we, it's really difficult because things are changing and we are so out of sorts. Any suggestions for sticking to that routine and maintaining that structure?
So the parts of your routine that you know are going to be most difficult for you to stick to, you want to put them on the schedule next to things that you do enjoy as kind of a little bit of a reward, right? You don't want to stack all of the things that you dread all together on the schedule, because that's probably going to feel overwhelming and you're not going to want to do that. So kind of build little rewards into your schedule, vary what you're going to do throughout the day in terms of what, how much you enjoy that particular task. And get, if you have other people in your household, get them involved to kind of hold you accountable. Like, okay, we're going to try to have breakfast at this time, and then we're going to go take a walk as a family together after breakfast. And, you know, I'm a parent. If I tell my kids something like that, there's no way we're not going for a walk, right? They will hold you accountable if you have children in your home. If you have a spouse or a partner or a roommate, get them involved in that. It sometimes helps to post a visual schedule to write it out. You can get kids involved in that. They enjoy doing that a lot of times, and post it as a reminder of whether you're kind of on track and what you wanted to get done that day and the order in which you'd like to do it.
Yeah, and I think having a realistic schedule is helpful, you know, making sure that you aren't taking on too much, that you're, you know, allotting plenty of time to do these things, and also some time to take a breather, which can be difficult, because a lot of folks right now, they're parents, they're working, and they're teachers, and they're wearing a lot of hats. So it can be really, really difficult right now. I want to invite our listeners to call in with your comment or question. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. What about alcohol? You know, we're at home more. We've got more access to the refrigerator and to alcohol and food and things like that. Would y'all mind talking a little bit about the impact that alcohol can have on our mood, have on our sleep, things like that, so everybody understands before they have that third martini, what impact that could be having on them?
Sure. Alcohol is a depressant. So it kind of numbs us and it disinhibits us. So if we're having negative emotions in the moment, it can feel pretty good because it kind of pushes those back a little bit. Over the long term, though, it can have some pretty negative consequences in terms of people's mood and the stability of their moods and that sort of thing. It has a similar effect on sleep. It may help you get to sleep because it makes you feel drowsy. It kind of suppresses your nervous system and may ease you into sleep a little more easily. But as your body processes that alcohol and as it wears off throughout the night, you're likely to sleep more poorly later in the evening. And then, as you know, if anyone who struggled with sleep, once you have one bad night's sleep, you can get in a really bad cycle of having multiple bad night's sleeps where you're trying to catch up. You're sleeping during the day to try to catch up, and then that throws your schedule off the next day, and it becomes kind of a domino effect. So we talked earlier about some warning signs. If you find that you are reaching for alcohol a little more frequently, if you're feeling like you need a drink because of negative emotions, if someone else, of course, in your household is expressing concerns, those are times where it may be time to step back and kind of look at your alcohol use and try to cut back a little bit, or maybe seek professional help if that's necessary, if it's reached that point.
Yeah, I want to talk about sleep a little bit more because, you know, with people experiencing more anxiety, more depression, being out of routine, you know, people's sleep is being impacted significantly. Any suggestions for getting better sleep, getting your sleep routine, your sleep cycle back on track? What should people be doing to rest and sleep better?
Probably the best thing that anybody could do for their sleep is to really stick to a set time. So that means getting up around the same time every day, even if it's a weekend, because our bodies are really wired for that consistency. And we vary it by so much that it almost gives our bodies a sense of jet lag. And it can be really hard to set that back. So really, that's the simplest thing that would have the biggest impact is sticking to that routine. And that might mean, you know, setting an alarm for bedtime as well as for waking up.
Yeah, I'd also add to watch things like screen time, especially too close to bedtime, that can affect our natural cycles in our body. Our bodies are made generally to sleep at night and to be awake when there are lights on, and the lights from screens can sometimes confuse that system and have our sleep cycles thrown off. Caffeine is another big culprit when it comes to sleep problems, and that's another situation where people can get into this really negative cycle where they didn't sleep well, so they feel like they need the coffee or the espresso or the soda. And then they're kind of chasing that all day because then there's the crash and then they refuel with the caffeine and it disrupts our body's natural ability to regulate our sleep cycle. I'd also add to think about your physical sleep environment. So things that are obvious, like you want to make sure it's a comfortable temperature, that your bed isn't too hard or too soft, you know, and causing you to have back pain or anything like that, that your sleeping environment is quiet. And that you don't lie in bed awake for too long. If you're lying in bed, tossing and turning, and it's been 15 or 20 minutes, get up out of the bed. It sounds counterintuitive, but you want your bed to be a trigger for sleep. So as soon as 15 or 20 minutes have passed, get up, go to another room until you feel sleepy, until you feel tired enough that you feel like you could fall asleep, and then return to the bed. That way your bed and your bedroom are associated with that sleepiness and not with lying awake, tossing and turning, because our body is sensitive to those types of cues and makes those associations very quickly. So that's a way to break that association.
That's a great point. Also avoid looking at the clock. You know, we have a very good natural sense of time. So, you know, we don't have to be checking the clock and then when it's been 15 minutes, pop out. You know, if you're trying to sleep, if it's effortful, go ahead and get up and just do something relaxing for a while till that sleepiness returns and you can try again. And another tip that is probably pretty important is having a wind down period before bed. So not going straight from activity to activity to work, to worrying about this, to planning that, and then jumping into bed and expecting to fall asleep. You know, we need to relax, we need to ease into it. So that's something that can affect how easily people can get to sleep. And if you're the kind of person that worries, that sits there and starts thinking about the next day and a lot of other things, something you can do is take a moment earlier in the day and just ask yourself what might come to mind later. And if it's anything that you can jot down or plan for, it makes it a little bit easier to set that thought aside when it comes to you at night. A few other tips, just since we're talking about sleep, would be, like we've already mentioned, avoiding alcohol because it does make our sleep less restorative. Avoiding large meals right before bed, avoiding exercise right before bed, avoiding naps. That's something that can influence our sleep drive later on. So if you're sleeping during the day and you're having trouble sleeping at night, that's really something you should try to avoid until you can get that back to normal.
I'd also add that there are a lot of medical conditions that can affect your sleep. So if you have a medical condition that does, make sure you're working with your primary care doctor or your specialist to keep that well managed. And rule that out as a variable that might be impacting your sleep too before you start looking at other causes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's important, you know, with sleep or mental health issues, you know, that we consult our doctor and make sure that there isn't an underlying issue like a thyroid problem, or, you know, there are lots of medical conditions that can cause mood problems and sleep problems and so forth. So we want to make sure that if we're really struggling with something, that we check with a medical doctor and make sure that there isn't some kind of underlying medical issue that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. Sleep apnea would be a common example. One of the signs is drowsiness. So that's definitely something that you would want to screen for before trying to, address this with behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm. What about exercise and staying physically active? You know, that can be really helpful as far as mood and sleep. Maybe not exercise right before going to sleep, but exercising earlier in the day. Any suggestions as to how to get into an exercise routine, maintain that exercise routine? Any comments on the benefits of staying active?
Well, usually when I'm active, when I'm more active, I just feel better all the way around. So I think my mood is better. You know, I have more energy to do the things that I want to do or to make the changes that I want to make. And I think staying consistent in that, setting realistic exercise goals. Sometimes, you know, we look on social media or we look at these workout videos and it may be too strenuous. So definitely staying within our means where we're comfortable, and staying realistic. Sometimes I can't go to the gym. So sometimes maybe working in the yard is my exercise for that day. Taking a walk is my exercise for that day. Intenseness isn't always the key, but just staying where you're comfortable at and what is going to make you overall feel better.
Mm-hmm. Just to add to that, physical activity does reduce activity in the amygdala, which is the part of our brain that that controls fear and our stress response. So that's just, you know, in addition to all the benefits that we feel when we're accomplishing a small goal where, we're starting to feel more confident and proud of ourselves. Yeah, there's that biological benefit as well.
So it's especially helpful during this time when our amygdalas are being activated that we have something that can counteract that.
For sure. Yeah. And find something that you like to do. You know, there's so many free apps and YouTube videos. We don't have to go for a run. I know so many people that just hate running. You know, maybe it's a dance class or an online yoga class. Find something that you really do like. And like Jennifer was saying earlier, there's all those things you can do with routine that will support you actually doing it. So maybe having a workout buddy or pairing it with a reward. Those are things that can help you follow through. And just expect setbacks. You know, don't give up if you miss the one day you said you were going to do it.
Right. And change is hard. So change is never easy. If it was, everyone would do it. So you may have setbacks, like Coral said, and it may not be, you know, very consistent at first, but sticking to it and trying your best to stay in a routine, it'll get more easier and easier every time.
So I want to invite our listeners to call in with your comment or question. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. I want to switch gears just a little bit and talk about children for a few minutes. We as adults are being impacted. So, I mean, definitely our children are being impacted too. Any suggestions regarding how to talk with children about all of these changes, how to talk with children about the fact that we're having to be super careful and wash our hands, and any suggestions to parents and adults out there regarding how to talk about this and explain all of this to children?
Sure. I think a good starting point is not to assume that your child does or doesn't know anything about this, right? And also not to assume that they're having any particular emotional reaction to it. So go into the conversation with kind of a curiosity. Ask your kid, you know, what have you heard about this? They may have heard a whole lot that you didn't know that they did, or they may have not heard very much at all. And your approach will vary depending on where they fall on that continuum. You want to talk about things in age-appropriate terms and at your child's developmental level. So, you know, most children know what it's like to be sick. They've had that experience before. And most of them have some understanding that germs are generally what make us sick. So, you know, talking about it as a germ, and that we can do things to protect ourselves, like washing our hands and not sharing drinks and staying physically apart from other people and that sort of thing. You also want to make sure that you give your children a chance to ask questions while you're talking about this. Let them kind of lead the conversation in that way. And a lot of times we as adults, we have so much information about this situation and we assume that our kids are going to want to know all of that. And sometimes their questions are just very simple. You know, will I be able to have my birthday party? Yes or no. Will I be able to go see my grandparents? Things like that. And we're wanting to talk to them on this high level. And that's not really how they're processing things all the time. So let your child lead the conversation, answer just what they ask, and try not to go too far beyond what they're asking, and let their questions kind of set the boundary for you. You also want to model how to express the emotions that we're all feeling. So, you may start the conversation by saying, you know, this has been really confusing for me. I'm feeling kind of sad, and sometimes I feel worried. Sometimes I enjoy having the extra time at home, and sometimes I really want to get out of the house. How do you feel about it? So that they know that a wide range of emotional reactions are normal and healthy and okay, and that you're there to support them through that. And the final thing I would say is don't make any promise to your child that you cannot yourself keep. So you don't want to say something like, you'll never get coronavirus, right? That's not something that's entirely in your control. So you don't want to make a promise like that. What you can say is something like, we're being very careful. We're going to wash our hands. I'm going to do everything I can to keep our family healthy and that sort of thing, to reassure them, but not give them this false sense of security, because then if something does happen, that calls into question their trust of you, because you made a promise that you really couldn't fulfill.
And I think, Jennifer, what you said about, you know, expressing to children the fact that you're feeling anxious, you're feeling overwhelmed, that's important, because a lot of times we as parents think, oh, well, we can't let our child see us a little upset or concerned or what. And it's not that, you know, we want to manage our emotions around our children, but we also want to let them know that it is normal to experience emotions. And if we don't, then they feel alone. They feel like they're the only ones that are worried. They're the only ones that are feeling anxious. They're the only ones that are feeling frustrated. So expressing that you're feeling those things also can help them to feel comfortable starting a dialogue with you about what's going on inside of them. Anything that we should be looking for in children as far as signs that maybe they're struggling and having difficulty?
I think with that in particular, we would maybe look out for regressions in behavior. Say maybe they've been potty trained for a while and now maybe we have an accident, or maybe there's increased separation anxiety. Maybe these things are observable, like they're telling you they're worried, they're catastrophizing. So those are some things that we would be looking out for that might signal increased anxiety and a change in functioning, just as we talked about earlier with adults.
And I would say we would also want to look out for things like excessively washing their hand. If they're, you know, so focused on washing their hands that they can't do anything else, they don't want to play with their toys without, you know, sanitizing them in between playing with them, or they're afraid to go outside, maybe just even in their backyards. That's realistic, because in the news and the media, everything is, you know, be careful, stay your distance. Is it airborne? Is it not? And I think people have a lot of good information and some sources don't have good information. So definitely critiquing what your child is watching, taking those media breaks, and like we talked about earlier, normalizing those behaviors. So again, your children can express when something arises.
One thing that we neglected to mention as we gave all those tips about sleep is why it's important. It made me think of it because, you know, maybe trouble sleeping is something a child would exhibit if they're under extreme stress. And sleep really does matter. There's a lot of health benefits on our attention, our energy level, our longevity, our immunity. So these are all things that that are important during any time, but especially now as kids being at home instead of school, we see a lot of, oh, my sleep schedule's messed up, or we're staying up all night playing video games. And I think it's important to, yeah, just to prioritize sleep because it does matter.
Mm-hmm. And we can get maybe 6-7 hours of sleep, but children obviously need more sleep depending on their developmental age. They may need 12 hours of sleep. So be sure that you're paying attention to that as well. Like Coral said, some kids are staying up late into the night and they are getting adequate sleep, which means that's going to offset their behavior, is going to offset their ability to sleep, is going to offset their ability to eat. And we didn't really talk about this, but nutrition is big during this time as well. A lot of kids are only eating snacks and candies and chips, and it's important that they have a well-balanced diet as well for their sleep, for their development. So just be aware of that as well.
Yeah, what I'm seeing with a lot of the children that I have as patients is that they are staying up later, they're playing video games later, they're staying on their phones later, their sleep schedules are off, they're having behavioral problems. You know, the younger children, you know, we tend to see changes in sleep and eating habits, and then the older children we tend to see more irritability and things like that. Not that the younger children can't get irritable too, they certainly can. But you know, any differences in what we should be looking for regarding smaller children and older children, or same sorts of things that we should be looking for regarding signs that they're in distress?
Well, smaller children, I believe you'll see a lot of tantrums. You will see irritability, screaming, hitting, biting, kicking. Those are some of the things you'll see with a lot of the younger children. Older children, they may act more aggressively. They may fight their siblings. They may yell and scream. And so maybe they have issue getting out of bed. Maybe you find that they aren't eating very much at all. Those are some of the things that you want to look out for older children and younger children.
So we have just a few minutes left. I want to touch on one thing that I think is important. You know, a lot of us are wearing masks, and that in itself can be very triggering, because I know, at least for me, when I'm wearing the mask, it's like this constant reminder on my body that everything's different and everything's changed. And that can be a little anxiety provoking. Any suggestions for people when they find things that are triggering, what they can do, whether that be a mask or just, you know, news reports or things like that? If people are feeling triggered, any suggestions as to what they can be doing?
If it's something like a news report, that's a place where you have a point of control. Right? You can turn off the TV, you can close down the web browser, you can, you know, put the phone down and go for a walk or do something that is completely kind of separated from that news source. If you're talking about something like a mask that is something that you would wear, you know, for your protection and for others, then if it's physically uncomfortable for you, there are some cloth ones that some people find to be a little more comfortable. So make sure the type of mask that you're wearing is as comfortable as you can, whichever one works for you. And also, you may practice wearing it a little bit loosely, you know, when you are at home, to get yourself used to it a little bit, bit by bit, before you have to put it on so tightly if you're leaving the house or going to the grocery store, things like that. and just monitor your thought process while you're doing that. If you're telling yourself, you know, I have to wear this mask and life's never going to be the same again, and we're never going to go back to normal and that sort of thing, then that's not going to be helpful for you in terms of reducing your anxiety and your negative emotions. Saying something like, you know, I'm going to wear this while I go in the grocery store. Then when I get home, I can take this off and put it away and I don't have to think about it again until the next time I'm in the grocery store. Or doing some of the breathing exercises that Coral was talking about earlier, the deep belly breaths from your diaphragm that can help calm you and help slow some of those physiological reactions that send messages to our brain that, hey, something is wrong. We're in danger. We need to fight or flight, right? Doing things like that to interrupt some of those alarm systems that we have in our bodies.
So I think we have time for one more question. I think this is an important one because this is one that I have been getting a lot of questions about homeschooling. Any suggestions for parents who are struggling with homeschooling and how to make that work?
Like you've kind of emphasized throughout, I think that boundaries and structure are important. So like, you know, having a designated place and a designated time for school and having that kind of queued up can facilitate things. I mean, that's something small, but I think it's helpful. Another thing to just consider is if the interaction is really, really distressing or really, really stressful, I think that emotional stability and security are more important than that day's lesson, you know, and long-term success and emotional health will be better tied to just having that emotional security than their academic mastery.
Yeah, and I would add to build breaks into your school time with your child and let them know about that. So we're depending on their age, you want, you know, the older they are, the longer they can go between breaks. But you tell them, you know, we're gonna work on this, I'm gonna set this timer, we're gonna work for 30 minutes, and then you can go stretch or run around or have a dance party or whatever for 5 minutes, or whatever interval you feel like is appropriate for your child. Communicate with your child's teachers too. Not everything is an urgent assignment. So let them know, check in with them, like, how would you prioritize this? If we can only get 3 assignments done this week, which 3 should we focus on? And they'll give you feedback. I've done that myself with my kids' assignments. And like Coral said, it's not worth the significant emotional distress. Be willing to walk away, to put it down. If you have an area in your home where you're doing schoolwork, that can be separate from other places that you can close off, like an office or something, that's good. If you can't, put the supplies in a basket or container so they can be put away if you're doing that like in a dining room or living room.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much for talking with everyone this evening about how to deal with the mental health aspects of COVID-19. I think the most important thing right now is everybody to remember, just do the best you can. We'll get through this. And counselors, we are available by telephone. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Troy Jones and Wally Derleth. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.